All right, this is the Canyons 100K preview episode. I'm joined by friends and frequent collaborators Leah Yingling and Brett Hornig. We have a lot to discuss in this episode, and we want to especially thank all the fans out there that reached out over IG in the past few weeks to plug some questions, takes, and stats to Bantron. We're going to get to a lot of it, but first, Leah, what's up with you? What's new in your world? It's been, I think, since Black, and actually, no, we did the further recap, so it's been about a month, but what's new in your world?
It's been busy, oddly busy. Work's been busy, just trying to get back into a rhythm of training and just traveling for life and work as well. So balancing that, trying to get back on the horse for some Western States training, which is going to be here before we know it. I think 10 weeks away. So yeah, just hanging out.
You're also the most accomplished of the three of us here at this race, the Canyons 100K. You got a golden ticket here a few years back. You kind of started the Western journey.
I did. I actually have some notes in my notes for this that I mean, I was planning on holding, but I guess I can just spell them out right here. Since
did I just walk into something?
Okay. Yeah. So I beat Finn by 45 minutes in 2022, and I beat Brett by 19 minutes in 2021. So I'm undefeated with both of you at this race.
Yep.
Where's the next venue?
Yeah. I was wondering if that was going to come up, our race. We didn't know each other back in 2021. Like, we saw on Strava exactly where you passed me. Like, I don't know if that race is today. Maybe I try and fight for at least another minute or two.
Yeah, I think you would have to at least.
Brett, what's the latest in your world?
What do we got? I don't know. I'm not a dad yet, but maybe by the next time we record another podcast, I might be. So yeah, we're getting close. We're in that almost any minute now kind of waiting game. That's exciting. Yeah, I mean, springtime in Ashland is absolutely beautiful. It's the best season for running here. I highly recommend coming out, do some runs with me while I still can. But yeah, it's been good. Just been working a lot. We're prepping over here.
I've got a dad joke for you. Are you ready?
Oh boy.
Why couldn't the bicycle stand on its own? It was too tired.
Nice. Good job, Finn.
I appreciate it. You gotta have those, you know, I got a whole Rolodex going. So talking Canyons though. Where should we start? Should we talk about like what's new this year? Because there are some changes for this year's edition which are interesting.
I mean, there's changes every year with Canyons at this point. Man, I feel like it's not a Canyons conversation without us talking about what changes there are this year. From my perspective in my 10 years of being involved in ultra running, Canyons and the Georgia Death Race have to be like the most altered course over the years. And I went back to look at this. So Canyons itself has existed for quite some time, but became a golden ticket race, I believe, back in 2019 timeframe. And before that, and then for that 2019 edition, there was two out and backs from Forest Hill. And that was the year that our friend Jimmy Elam in Salt Lake City, he got the golden ticket that race. 2020 rolled around, the race was canceled due to COVID. And then 2021 rolled around, and there was this like adapted COVID course where it went from the town of Auburn and finished up at China Wall and was a net uphill course. 2022 was roughly that same iteration with like a slight variation. And then 2023 last year was just this what I felt was a pretty contrived course, so it could start and finish in Auburn. And then 2024, we're seeing kind of this reverse direction of what we did in the 2021 and 2022 edition, which is starting at China Wall and doing some fun things en route to this largely net downhill course that will then finish in Auburn. So lots of variations. I think it's really hard to compare times over the years because it's just changed so drastically.
And this course that they're running this year was supposed to happen last year, but they didn't because of all the snow. There was like 8 feet of snow up at China Wall at this point last year, and they would have had just no chance of getting anything going in the first like 50K there. But it seems like things are pretty good. I mean, I've seen like on Strava, a lot of people have gone and run the whole course and there's like a little bit of snow or minimal snow. So yeah, it should hold. They should run this course. Yeah, I think the main reason too for going China Wall to Auburn was that way the finish party could be in Auburn and not out in the middle of nowhere in China Wall where there's no cell coverage, no media like access and somewhat tight parking.
Yeah, small parking lot. It's so cool up there though.
It was really cool.
Yeah, I think last year when we were doing our preview episode, we had a lot of conversations around this just about like how quintessential that old course was with like, it felt like American ultra running, like these like grassroots events, and it still felt like it was holding on to some of those pieces. And yeah, I think this edition this year will feel a little less grassroots.
Yeah. One of the big things that's like a big change is the AM shuttle to the start of the race. I just want to like pay my respects to all of the runners who have to get on a school bus at 3 a.m. to go to China Wall for a 5 a.m. start. Because like, I'm sure most of the people in this field have not driven from Auburn up to China Wall, but we all actually have. And it's a long ass road.
It is. Yeah, it's long. That's not an, that's not a short drive.
No, like, yeah, take your, like anti-nausea, carsick medications, get your like titanium bracelets out or whatever you need. I'm just, yeah. I hope everyone's been practicing their early AM wake ups and figuring out like what their morning routine is for getting to a parking lot at 3 a.m. or I guess earlier, it's like 2:45 because I think the buses roll out at like 3.
Go call your Zofram dealer before that bus ride. Brett, do you like where this course has finally landed in terms of it running from China Wall to Auburn? Like as a spectator, do you like it? As a runner, do you like it? Talk about the pros and cons there. And Lee, I'll throw that to you too, but you first, Brett.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, not really. I like the net uphill better. A lot of people are like, well, yeah, it should be net downhill because it's like Western States. That'll like pick the best Western States, like golden ticket. It's like, but like, we just turned this race into a tiny Western States, which it just doesn't feel different enough to me. I'm also worried about just the damage that a net downhill race like this does, you know, 10 weeks out from Western States. I feel like they were able to get away with it, you know, this being a golden ticket race so close to Western States because it was net uphill. Like, yeah, maybe you're like trying harder during, but you know, you just don't get nearly as beat up. And like from a spectator standpoint, it's, I mean, Western States is a really difficult race to spectate as a spectator. And like, this is no easier. I mean, what's like as a spectator, the first spot you could hit is Forest Hill.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I think Crew has one earlier spot or no?
I'd imagine it's that because you used to be able to like drive into Deadwood to like maybe spectate, but I doubt you can. Mm-hmm. Do that,
but that's only like a dozen miles in at mm-hmm. this point now.
Yeah, so it's probably
yeah. And then there's like
Michigan Bluff.
Yeah, that's a big drive, and then yeah, and then you're following down to Forest Hill, and then somewhere along because you don't cross the river, you kind of stay on the Forest Hill side. So there's probably only you know three, maybe four spots where you could spectate. But there's one part of the course that I wanted to bring up that I just was like wanted to see if you guys. Are as worried about this as I am. The out and back down to Swinging Bridge.
Yeah.
So it's an out and back. You run down like Devil's Thumb to Swinging Bridge and you turn around and you come right back up. It's not that far into the race. Like it'll have gotten spread out a little bit, but like when the leaders have gone down Swinging Bridge and they turn around and come up, I just feel like it's going to be really hard to go around people because Devil's Thumb is so steep. When I'm climbing it, I am not like looking more than 1 foot in front of my face. So like, I just don't know how people are going to be able to navigate going around. Not to mention if it's also wet, that area got burned, you know, what was it a year and a half ago? It's got maybe a little bit more like ground coverage for plants, but like it's one of those spots of trail that if there's water on it, it could potentially just be like a muddy slip and slide. And I just don't know how that works with like 500 people doing an out and back on the steepest 1.5 mile section of the course.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm really excited that that part is added to the course because I do think it adds a fun climb and a fun element that's really going to like hammer some people's legs early on after they've already descended 9 miles with 3,000 feet of downhill. So I'm excited for that section, but I think that's going to be chaos because like that climb takes a while. Like I reflected back on, I think my Strava from Western States when I did the Devil's Thumb climb, and I think it's just over 30 minutes for that. So if you can imagine, like there's going to be a lot of people stretched out on that. They're probably going to have to pass a lot of the field for that out and back, which is a little unfortunate.
Thanks to NAC, the official nutrition partner of Singletrack, for supporting this episode. We've got two big American Ultra events on the near horizon. This coming weekend, we've got the Canyons 50K, 100K, and 100-mile races, followed up by the Cocodona 250 in early May. Both of these events will have NAC products at the aid stations, and if you want to prepare accordingly, I strongly encourage you to check out the nutrition app on their website, which has you input data like your sweat rate, finish goals, height and weight, and other factors to provide you with a nutrition plan dialed for what's on course for race day. I'm personally using it for Cocodona, and it's awesome. Additionally, if you end up buying some product to train and race with over the next few weeks and months, feel free to use code SINGLETRACK15 at checkout for 15% off your next order. With that, let's get back to this preview episode with Brett and Leah. So one interesting point, back when Georgia Death Race was a golden ticket, 2016 to 2019, there was a section around mile 21 that we would all do. It was a 3 mile steep descent back up into steep climb to get back on the rest of the point to point course. And agree with everything you guys said, total chaos. Also super interesting from a psychological standpoint, because if you are at the front of the pack, it's really, it can be a positive, it can be a negative, depending on how you kind of process pack dynamics and how spread out the race is, to see people coming back up the climb while you're doing the descent. To get that spacing that late or that early in the race is, I think, is going to be very interesting to see how runners deal with that. So not unprecedented, and pretty cool that they added it in.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. And if you don't mind me taking a step back just to describe what the course does up to that point. So like we mentioned, it'll start at China Wall and we'll go 9 miles with like 3,000 feet-ish of descending down to like, I think, the Deadwood area, hit Devil's Thumb, and then go down to Swinging Bridge. Then you go back up to Devil's Thumb, and then you'll go down to El Dorado Canyon from there, which is right before Michigan Bluff. So then you'll climb up to Michigan Bluff and you'll be on the Western States course as is, down through Cal Street until you get down right before the river, when then you'll bump up on Driver's Flat Road, which is pretty steep in itself for a road. And then at that point, you go to Mammoth Bar, and then I think to the Confluence Trail to No Hands Bridge, and then we'll follow from No Hands Bridge on the Western States course, roughly up to Roby Point, and then back to Auburn.
I do love the downtown Auburn finish. Same. I think that finish is sweet.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And I think from a community perspective, last year when I was spectating the race, we were up at Roby Point, which is really fun. But just seeing videos of people in downtown Auburn, I think that's really a really cool celebration.
I got to throw this listener question out to you two. There was probably actually 15 to 20 people that had a variation of this same question. And it was whether or not this race, especially with the new course and the timing before Western, is it too close to Western for recovery to be adequately prepared for that race? Leah, you would probably beg to defer, at least on the previous course. But what do you guys think, starting with you, Leah?
Yeah, previous course, I would have said no. I actually thought it was nice because you didn't get entirely beat up from the race because you had a little bit less downhill and more uphill. And I actually think it led into Western States training quite nicely, where you could kind of do this vert block for Canyons. And then if you got the golden ticket, you could kind of speed train a little bit more into Western States and get your downhill legs feeling a bit better. And then looking back historically, like Adam Peterman got a golden ticket at Canyons back in 2022. And he ended up going on to have a great Western States that year. Even last year on the course that they had, Ida Nielsen and Priscilla Forgy both got tickets on the women's side, both had top 10 performances. Cole Watson had a top 10 performance as well from his golden ticket at Canyon. So I think Canyon's runners actually do quite well if they can make it to the Western States start line. It's just a matter of, can they make it to the Western States start line? And looking at how the Canyons organization, Canyons by UTMB, describes the course, I got a couple different variations from the website. So I am very curious to see what the numbers actually look like. But one of the stats that was thrown out is approximately 13,000 feet of vert and 17,000 feet of descent. And if you look at the Coros and GPX file, which I extracted today, that stands true. But then in another place, it says 10,500 feet of elevation gain along the North Fork of the American River. And then in another place, it says 11,000 plus feet of elevation gain. So I think I'm probably going to go off the GPX file, which was 13,000 feet of uphill, 17,000 feet of downhill. So if we're talking 17,000 feet of downhill in 100K, that's really significant. I think this will definitely stay in the legs of the runners. It's hard not to. And the 13,000 feet of uphill is still significant. So I know, Finn, you always like to ask questions about, like, what have you changed your mind about recently? Yeah. And I came into this race preview and, like, my research for this race thinking that Canyons was going to lend itself really nicely to, like, a faster, speedier runner because it is net downhill. I changed my mind, and I think that this course, you actually need to be a good climber and have experience climbing and have experience fighting through early climbs and kind of surviving later in the race. So I think in some conversations early season, we're like, oh, Black Canyon and Canyons are going to favor the same style of runner. I actually think probably not so much.
Yeah, I actually agree with, I mean, pretty much all that. Yeah, I also had written down like three of the four golden tickets from last year, went on to get top 10 at States. But kind of like you said, Leah, even though it's a net downhill course, that doesn't mean you need to be fast to be good at it, because you don't actually need to be fast to run downhill. Gravity's on your team there. Like, they're on your side. Like, anyone can run fast downhill at this level. It's then more, it comes down to like the fatigue resistance, like who can run downhill really well on the first descent and then the second descent and then the third descent. And then when it starts to like level out by the river, who then still has power in their legs? That speedy person might make it 40 miles and then totally blow up. It sounds like we're talking about a Western States preview right now, but that's kind of what it's like, feels like, where even the people who do really well at Western States don't necessarily have to be particularly fast. They have to be able to run, and then they have to be pretty resilient. And as we've seen, Western States, you know, trashes you. Like, you know, the award ceremony at Western States has more people hobbling around than the award ceremony at Hard Rock. Which
that's was a good observation.
So surprising. That was so surprising. And that's because, like,
that's a good point.
You can run just so much more of it here. So, I mean, yeah, unless someone can win the race without having to go like fully all out, it's just going to be a hard one to recover from. And then I think it's just really going to come down to like the discipline and the trust between Canyons and Western States to just not overdo it. Because if you're fit enough to win this race, you're probably fit enough to be in the conversation for winning Western States. Just take that same fitness to Western States. Like, don't worry about getting fitter.
You know, when we watch Black Canyon most years, there's, you know, classically pretty large packs in both sides of the race together for the first 20, 30 miles of the race. Then it gets strung out. How do you guys anticipate that looking at this race? I think one of the things that I'm the most curious about is how much we should be on blow up watch for more or less people in this race versus Black Canyon.
I think
we're on blow up watch.
Yeah. I think we saw a return to blow ups at Black Canyon. Like, we were kind of in this period where we're like, oh, maybe blow ups are like yesteryear. Like, no, Black Canyon showed us that they're still happening. I think there was it was a product of some of the heat there and then some like aggressive running. But at least on the women's side, we didn't see blowups. We saw a lot of DNFs. On the men's side, we saw a decent amount of blowups. So little interesting dynamics. I think with canyons, we will see blowups, and I think it's going to be the nature of the course. It's so front loaded with climbing, and I think people's quads are going to be pretty wrecked. Let's say by like 50K or so, but then Cal Street is going to feel pretty easy because it's this nice gradual downhill. But then I think where we're going to see people just completely fall apart is the climb up Driver's Flat Road. Like Western States training camp, like once you finish that run on day two and you have to climb like 2 miles up Driver's Flat Road, like people are walking.
That road sucks.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's not that fun. It's usually exposed. I don't think this year we'll see quite like right now. The projected forecast is not for a lot of heat.
That John Denver was full of shit, man. Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's ever getting me up Driver's Flat Road is the burgers on that training camp day.
And the massage tents.
Oh, man, the monster massage. Those guys are painful. So painfully good. I think this race has the potential. I think the blowups will start with the legs getting shocked on the climb up to Devil's Thumb.
Oh, that's early.
Because someone, like, because I think, like, you know, someone like Petter Engdahl, he's going to run every step of it like no problem because it's so much like he's been training on gradients so much steeper than this where he'll just be like, you know, like Killian jogging where it'll be like the nice little quick efficient steps. And then he'll just be pushing people like full lactic behind him. And then like you spend, you know, 20 minutes going up Devil's Thumb trying to run with someone fully lactic because it's, you know, what, 1,100 feet a mile. You burn a lot of matches and you don't get those back. So I think it's, I don't know if it's going to be Petter, but it's going to be someone who's really good at just like jogging up steep things. That's just going to piss a lot of people off.
I'll just reference the men's field at Black Canyon here as just one example. But like you look at the guys who finished like 4 through 9 at that race, people like Puma, Stephen Kirsch, Craig Hunt, Trayson Knopp, they all ran fantastic, stellar races that in any other year, they would likely be rewarded with a golden ticket. They were nowhere near that at Black Canyon. And it makes me wonder, like, is the group psychology of this men's field, for example, thinking if I don't go, if this race gets strung out and I lose touch, I've lost my chance. And like, I need to follow Petter. I need to follow Adam from the gun. And because of that, we see people out of their league and, you know, the blowups come as a function of like that anxiety of like, this is the new normal for golden ticket chasing.
I do think, especially in the group that you mentioned, and I'll probably put Rod Farvard in there as well.
Yes.
Like
yep.
They left Black Canyon feeling similarly based on some conversations with them is like, you know, how much is too much to give? Like, I think I'm being smart early on. And yes, I am indeed being smart, but it was still too much ground to make up. So yeah, like were there kind of like lessons learned there? And like, will any of them change their strategy here? I think a few of them definitely will.
Yeah, we're going to see even more aggression because yeah, like you said, the like Hayden Hawks and Hans Troyer, they like set this hot pace and it's like, well, this is too fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they didn't slow down enough. And then it's just like, oh, well, guess that's that. I ran a great race, but, you know, it was a little bit too slow.
Mm-hmm. This is a hypothesis, so it's more like a question, but like, is there any data that would show that for people that play it smart, less and less frequently the race is coming back to them? And maybe this is more so on the men's side. I don't know. And it could be on the women's side too, but like, would that strategy of like maturity and caution and being smart for the majority of the race pay off, or do you just narrowly miss out?
I think it depends on what your goals are. Like, yeah. I still think you could be on the podium, like with that more conservative approach. I think you need to be in contact though. Like you can't be super far. You can't be like 20 minutes back at 50K. I really don't think so. You need to be in contact to some degree. But I think if you want to win it, you still you need to be running with some amount of aggression and risk taking.
Which that's actually kind of an interesting point, because there are like two races within this race. I mean, there's the Golden Ticket race, but then this is also one of the like World Series majors, North America majors. Top 10 here could gain you entry to CCC. How many people on this, on our list, are just going for the top 10 versus a Golden Ticket? I feel like most of them are here for Golden tickets, but is there that thought of like, oh, maybe I'll know by like 20 miles if I'm going to get a Golden Ticket or not. And if I'm not, then I'll try my best to just hang on for 10th. Or is it like, I'm going to try and stay within Golden Ticket contention as long as possible at the risk of absolutely exploding or dropping out?
Yeah, I will add the caveat that there's so many like backdoor ways in the rules for UTMB to get into it that you really don't even need to finish top 10 at this race to get into UTMB. You need to have a respectable UTMB index at this race, and it's not a hard target to hit, to be honest, for anybody that's considered an elite runner in this field. So I don't,
that's a good point too.
I don't think that top 10 is driving too many people, if I had to guess.
Yeah. It's probably, this is a very much a Golden Ticket race first.
Anything else worth commenting on when it comes to course strategy, weather conditions, historical data, competitive race context?
Oh yeah. The way too early weather forecasts were, what are we, 10 days out from the race? Leo, what do you got?
I've got about 53 is the high and cloudy in Auburn. What do you got?
53 in Auburn?
Oh, wow. I got upper 60s.
I won upper 60s. Auburn.
Has an ice age descended on Auburn?
I mean, if it's upper 50s in Auburn, then you actually are risking the chance of snow at China Wall because, you know, we're talking 10 days out. You know, Leo went iPhone weather. I went AccuWeather. So this is like the level of accuracy we're going, where it's like, AccuWeather can give me like 90 days out. AccuWeather said a chance of precipitation on Saturday, which that's why I was talking about the out and back down to Swinging Bridge. Cause I was like, dude, if it starts raining up there, that would just be heinous. I mean, Finn, you got to run, or did you guys both run the super muddy?
Year? Oh, the like the shin deep snow slush.
Yeah.
Yes. That was 2022.
That was 22.
It wasn't sloppy at Swinging. It was not sloppy down at Swinging Bridge. It was sloppy right after you started. And that was heinous. And that would be really sloppy with a huge field going off together.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. So right now, weather's favoring the runners.
I think so too. Because like even if I'm looking at my trusty, rusty iPhone weather right now, and like the next week in Auburn, it's 75 and sunny from until next Monday, which is the week of the race. But then after that, it just drops down straight 60s and cloudy every single day. So.
Oh, that could be great.
That'd be really nice.
Yeah, last year at the race, it was very hot.
So hot.
And people felt that. Like it looked like a classic, like, what the hell are we doing out here kind of ultra in Auburn.
I love that so much though.
I know, it's kind of fun. Like there's a charm to it. There's a charm.
Oh yeah, one more thing. What did I want to say here? Oh, just one thing about competition is I feel like this time of year, and we've talked about this on prior podcasts, competition just gets so saturated, and there's a lot of other competitive races happening around this time and actually happening like that same weekend too. So a few of the ones that are just happening in the same time period is like Madera. We just had Gorge Waterfalls 100K. Up in the Pacific Northwest. Transvolcania is like probably a week or two later as well. So I think we're seeing a lot of, especially our international competition, get like scattered about. And I would say specifically on the men's side for this race, this is a largely North American field, some international women representation, very few on the men's side from the elite perspective. So I think a lot of that just has to do with like lots of races happening, lots of series going on. Yeah. It's kind of competitive this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Really good point.
Mount Fuji as well.
Yeah.
That's coming up too.
I'd say the last thing that I would add is, you know, we just went 9 weeks in between golden ticket races, which just seems so,
it's too many
it
weeks.
Seems so wrong to me. And like, I miss the pre-2020 urgency, frequency, and distinct season of golden ticket racing. I think that everyone's doing a great job picking races, but like, I would love to bring it back to that like 3 month consolidated stretch where there's just so much anxiety and fandom in the air. It's awesome. Yeah.
Make over racing great again.
Oh man.
Let's get to the women's field preview. So storylines, analysis, predictions. Leah, you provide an absolute masterclass every time we do this in terms of categorizing the field. I have to assume, I didn't even ask you, but I'm assuming you did something of that nature this time around too. How are you thinking about it?
Yeah, I told Brett, I said, I'm digging deep into the women's field. Can you make sure you dig deep into the men's field? And he was like, well, it's a little hard when the entrance list is like impossible to access. So I will say like...
Yeah, can we break that down real
quick?
Yeah,
let's break it, because I think this is important from like a follower of the sport perspective. So
yeah, so
yeah, go ahead.
I was like, on the UTMB website, when you go to Canyons, there's a way to look at the runner start list, and you don't get all the names, but you can search by race, like the 100K, 100 mile, 50K, and then men or women, nationality. If you go to 100K men, and then you switch to United States, it says that there are too many people and the list could not be brought up. And like, that's
your option.
And then that's it. So apparently there's like more people in the Canyons 100K field from America than the internet can handle. So I had to go just by off of like their elite entrance list, which is like UTMB index.
And it's not great. That's like probably like 20, 25 deep on both women and men. I will say there's one benefit to women being lower in participation for once in our life, is the women's entrance list when you filtered by USA was small enough that it would show you all of it. So it wasn't as hefty as the men's list. So we were able to access every single person from like North America and like all the other countries that were entered into the race for the women, but the men were a little tougher to access. So I will say there are likely some men that we are missing, especially from a North American contingent that weren't already classified as elite because they're UTMB indexed. So these might be runners who haven't run a UTMB race in the past, or maybe don't have a race that assigned them a UTMB score. So they were harder for us to access and put in this analysis.
Also, thank you to Delta G Ketones for their support of the Single Track podcast. I've used exogenous ketones in my training and racing over much of the last 18 months, and these are the best in class. There are many benefits to using ketones in your training and racing. My personal favorite is that they improve cognition at exhaustion, which is one of the most important value propositions in an ultra running context. For example, I took a bottle about 2 hours into my race 2 months ago at the Red Mountain 50K, again before, during, and after the Antelope Island 50 miler a month ago, and then again multiple times throughout the Desert Rats 100K this past weekend. In all three cases, I just felt a similar level of focus and resolve and overall solid decision making compared to sort of a pre-race baseline. So if you're curious to try them yourself, feel free to use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout on their website for 20% off your next order. With that, let's get back to this preview episode. I've got one quick question, Leah. Overall, how deep is this field? How does it compare to Black Canyon and other golden ticket races, subjectively, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's very competitive. I think we have world-class people on both the men and the women's side. I think we're going to have a very solid top 10 with notable people on both the men and women's side. I don't think it has the depth of Black Canyon quite as much, but I do think from our top end, just as competitive, like just as many world-class people and national-class people that we saw at Black Canyon.
More depth this year than last year, you would say?
I think so. Yeah, I definitely think so. I know we had a decent amount of carnage last year here because of the heat. And I think we had a lot of people running the 50K at Canyons last year, especially on the men's side, that I think we're seeing some of those people kind of cross over into the 100K this year. Because I think a lot of people were using this as their opportunity to get into UTMB races last year, less so as a golden ticket opportunity as well. Mm-hmm. And I will add, from a golden ticket perspective, there will be two on both men and women's side handed out here at Canyons. And I believe from a competitive standpoint, Katie Scheid is the only person who is already into Western States from the elite contingent on the entrance list.
I think so.
So women's race, golden ticket could roll down to third. Yep. Men's first come, first serve. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
I interrupted you. On to the categorization.
Okay. So I've got kind of four categories, but there are really two that I've just like divvied up into two other ones. So there's, for the women, I have proven mountain results in parentheses long, and then proven mountain results parentheses short, and then
small.
And then we've got flat/fast parentheses long, and then flat/fast parentheses short. So the women I have in these categories are, first off, women who have shown a lot of success in the longer mountain races at particularly at an international level. Maybe these are women that have represented Team USA at the World Championships in the 80K. These might be women who have stood on a podium or in a top 10 at like a UTMB or CCC style race. So in this category, I have Katie Scheid, Erin Clark, Amanda Basham, and Addie Bracey. And I'll probably dive into each of these specifically after I go through each category. And then in the short category, similar concept, women that have represented their country at a world championship. These are more likely like the 40K distance. So this is MK Sullivan, Megan Roach, and Jade Belsberg. And then our flat fast women are people who have largely had success at the courses that you would consider more flat, fast, and rolling. I'm thinking here a lot more like Javelina, Black Canyon style races. And that I've got Riley Brady, Anna Cassius, Stephanie Austin, Nicole Hansen, and Shay Aquilano. And then in my sad, lonely last category of flat, fast, parentheses short, is who I also consider the dark horse for the women's 100K race, which is Mary Denholm. She's a roadie with 236 Marathon at CIM in December, who just crossed over largely into the trails. She's done some ultras before, but has stuck largely to like the shorter distances and has just been taking the Boulder Strava CR by storm and just raging all around Boulder.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. And taking some like massive crowns out there, and especially on climbs and stuff. So I'm really excited to see her throw down at the 100K.
Is it possible to set up Strava alerts? Like, can you get like a ping when, you know, like certain segments go down, besides, you know, if you lose a segment?
That'd be cool. Probably not.
Oh, like actual segment alerts.
Yeah, that would be really neat.
Like, I have a list of like favorited segments, but I don't get any notifications for them. Yeah. I don't know if that's possible. That would be fun to categorize.
Yeah, I agree.
Strava that way.
Do you want me to dive into a couple of these then?
Yeah. I was going to add a question for you, Leah. So you think that the long mountain people as of current are probably the ones who are more reliably going to have a stronger race here?
Yes. And I think my like top five is comprised largely of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I think that I just think having experience with just like multiple longer climbs and races and being able to have like the quads for later racing and later climbing is going to be really important. Like, I even think that climb up from No Hands Bridge to Roby Point, I mean, that sucks. And like, that's hard to do when you're really tired. So somebody that can like power up that when they're at mile 55, I think is going to be absolutely crucial to having a good day.
Yeah, that's true. Like, having multiple downhill gears is like being able to taste lots of different kinds of wine. It's like actually kind of hard to eventually figure it out. Like, for most people running, like, downhill is downhill. And for some of these short mountain, flat, fast, long, flat, fast, short, like downhill is downhill. But to some of these longer mountain people, it's like they can differentiate their different downhill gears much better, which is super important.
Totally. And I'm just speaking entirely anecdotal here. But after I finished Further, which was flat, completely flat, pancake flat for, 6 days, I had no muscular soreness the days after. Like my muscular soreness from like UTMB, Western States, Canyons, any race with any amount of vert, uphill, downhill, just like has left me completely slaughtered the next day and just dead quads. And I think it's just a completely different stimulus. So I think if you've never raced 100K with this amount of descending, I mean, 17,000 feet is no joke. Like that's going to hit some people pretty hard. So I do think, especially the mountain results, like short and long categories, that's where I'm pulling a lot of my podium contenders from.
Yeah. And it's very likely that someone from one of these other categories could learn during this race that they have actually like pretty good downhill fatigue resistance, which would get them to like a successful finish during the race. They might be completely trashed afterwards, but someone could absolutely still figure that out midway through.
Totally. And I think a perfect example of that was Sarah Beal back in 2022 at this race. She finished in fifth place, was running in like podium position most of the day. And towards the end of the day, like her climbing was still so strong, but what ended up getting her was just like the descending. And she's somebody that I would have put at that time in more of those like flat, fast, short, long categories. So yeah, it adds up, and she had a phenomenal race that day. And I think that really broke her a little bit more onto the trail scene and the mountain scene that day, which was awesome to see. But I do think it can catch up to you later in the later stages of a race.
As an additional category, do you have people that you see as possible surprises at this race and or underdogs? Like that woman who was blowing up the segment scene in Boulder sounds like a good one. Anyone else you throw into like the category of, dare I say random baller?
Well, I was talking to Mike before this episode, and he was like, I think you guys need a new term for random baller, and I think it should be pancake. So Adam Peterman just ran out at Antelope Island here in Salt Lake City at the Buffalo Run 50K, and what he was hoping would be like a really low-key 50K for him a couple weeks ago. And he had a tough battle with Devin Pancake from, I think, Utah State.
Recent
grad, and nobody knew who he was. And he's just like this, college standout who just came to the trails. So he's like, wouldn't it be great if you could just be like, who's the pancake?
We got a pancake situation on our hands.
But yeah, I actually, Finn, like, I don't have anybody that I think will be a surprise. I think a lot of the women in the field, maybe Mary Denholm to some, would be a surprise and a dark horse, but everybody I've categorized is somebody that we've heard of, somebody that's been having results and has been extremely strong in recent years that I don't think anybody will be shocking see in the top 10.
I was surprised to see MK Sullivan's name on this 100K start list when, in some of her pre-race interviews before Black Canyon, she's like, I'm running Black Canyon as 100K. Probably will turn down the golden ticket because then I want to go focus on, shorter stuff throughout the rest of the year. Now all of a sudden we see her like on the 100K start list again. Like, is this a Western States golden ticket attempt? Is this just like a got to get the bad taste of Black Canyon out of my mouth? Like, I'm really curious what the rest of MK's year could look like if this race goes as well as it potentially could, because, Leah, you were saying too before we started recording that MK's training block for this race has looked a lot more complete than before Black Canyon.
Well, one does not simply one and done the ultra scene, as we very well know.
Maybe she got bit by the 100K bug. Who knows?
Yeah, I could totally see it being like wanting to feel a little bit more satisfied with the result and like completing that process of training for something, executing it to the best of your abilities and feeling pretty proud of that before moving on. Because I do know like MK had announced that she had like quite the summer lineup of races that were not 100Ks and were not 100 milers. So curious to see how much of that will stick beyond Canyons if she does have her day that she wants.
I mean, if you have success at a course that's like a miniature version of Western States, how do you not take that golden ticket? Because then like, you're probably going to be good at Western States. You just go do it again.
Yeah.
Easier said than done.
Yeah. No, you did. You did exactly that.
I know, easier said than done.
I keep getting us off track, though. I keep asking all these side tangent questions. So we've got the categories. Any other interesting storylines that we should talk about with these athletes and interactions on race day, stuff like that?
Yeah, let's. I think Katie Scheid is an obvious and really interesting one to talk about. She's already into Western States, had a phenomenal day there last year. I'm viewing her 100% as the one to beat. Her training is bonkers.
Monstrous.
Monstrous. And I just like look at it and I cannot fathom. It's over double what I do. And I think that's really cool just to see the variety of training that we have in the sport right now and like what you can be successful with. And I think Katie's coached by Jason Koop, and it's been working extremely well for her the last couple years, just with her result and training going into Western States last year. It looked really similar to what she's doing right now. So kind of in that like 16 to 17 hour range, 100 to 120 mile weeks with good vert, back-to-back 6 hour runs, maybe like a 6 hour run followed by a 5 hour run. Those are hard to do. And I think in most of our ultras, especially on the women's side of things, we often see ladies doing like one weekend like that, but Katie's doing like 3, 4, 5 weekends with like these really like chunky weekend long runs. And I think we were chatting before the call, like she doesn't do a lot of doubles either. So
yeah,
the way she's getting her mileage is in like 16 to 30 milers throughout the week, which it works well for her. And I'm really excited to see what she puts together. And like, it's an interesting choice to willingly put yourself in Canyon's 100K, knowing that it is pretty close to Western States. But I think she's probably doing it for a good reason.
If you had to guess,
money,
what percentage of female pro ultra runners in the sport are doing that level of volume in the few months leading up to a key race?
You know, I see it a bit. This is just from my perusing Strava and following competitors. With like the Euros, I think they put in a lot more hours. And maybe this is because I feel like a lot of the women in North America are coached by David and Megan Roach. Even like looking at this entrance list, there's probably at least 50% of the women that are coached by one of them. And that volume is usually 60 to 80 miles a week, which might average out to 10 to 14 hours most weeks. So we don't really see this like huge volume of like 18 to 24 hours. But I do think when we look at some of our European counterparts, especially for these more like these races that have a lot more volume and like the mountain ultras, I see a lot more training like Katie's.
I think another big factor is that Katie Scheid gets to run full time and like she has the opportunity to do it. And like, you know, I think on like professional female ultra running is still like pretty heavily underrepresented from a financial standpoint in terms of just like the like there just aren't that many women who run ultras professionally, like from North America, who can financially do it full time like Katie does. Whereas like there's a lot more men who just get to try it and see like what running 20 hours a week feels like. 'Cause you can't have a job when you're running like 20 to 25 hours a week, 'cause that's just running, like not to mention like the before and after. So it's like when you get to treat it like a full-time job, like, yeah, it becomes easier to put in that kind of volume, but it has to be a full-time job first and foremost. And that's just something that a lot of women in North America don't get. And, you know, that's something that I think we're seeing starting to change as the sport grows and more money goes into it. But, you know, I think that's one of the biggest difference makers.
Very exciting. All right, what's next? What do we got?
Speaking of the Roaches, I think Megan Roach returning and coming to the 100K distance for the first time is a really exciting storyline here as well. So she's just had such an interesting trajectory. I historically have always known Megan for faster distances. She's represented Team USA at some of the shorter distance World Mountain and Trail Running Championships. always just like so fast on, especially like California trails where they used to live for quite some time, I think holds a really impressive course record still at Way Too Cool 50K. So historically, that's always what I've associated Megan with. She has one 50 miler to her name back in 2017 at the North Face 50 miler, rest in peace. She had a great day there, but that was 7 years ago. So she's had so many ups and downs between then, between her heart issues that she's been experiencing the last couple of years and having to come over those hurdles. And then she's postpartum and has a sweet little one-year-old. So I think this return to like the longer distances has been really exciting to watch. And like, it seems from her perspective that she has a lot of energy and is feeling really excited about where she's at right now and feels like she's close to where she was at from like a speed and performance and competition level as she was back in 2017, when I would say she was probably at one of her peaks in her career. Most recently set a really, really phenomenal time at the Crown King Scramble 50K, just a few minutes below Ida Nielsen's course record there. And that was a great result for her. So I think she's going to be carrying that momentum into Canyons. She is a lower mileage athlete, usually like 8 to 9 hours a week of running, and supplements that with a little bit of like elliptical and biking, and has stayed really healthy doing that. So she reminds me a lot of Rachel Drake. And I think we had some conversations around Rachel going into Black Canyon, being like, she doesn't have a ton of experience with 100K distances. Her volume's a little on the lower side. And we weren't sure if we were like how confident we should be and what she was going to put together. But I think Megan fits a similar category, and I'd expect pretty similar results out of her.
Yeah. It's funny. Like Megan Roach, I think there's a lot of like newer fans to the ultra scene who know Megan as a coach to so many people. But Megan Roach is a straight up baller runner. Like she's lost like very few races. There's not that many runners out there that like win more than they lose. And Megan Roach is one of those people who's just like from like 50K and below on like a more runnable, like hilly trails. She's like one of the goats. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like her North Face 50 miles was really good too. So it's like, there was no reason why she couldn't be really good at 50 miles plus. It was just like, didn't have much reason to need to go up. Cause like, shoot, if I'm best at 50 Ks in the world, you're not going to see me running 100 mile anytime soon. But yeah, that's super exciting to see Megan lining up for Canyons. Cause yeah, she's like just one of the best like pure runners in the field.
Yeah, I always like, I remember when I first got into the sport and got Strava and started like following Megan on Strava and just seeing the runs that she was putting down regularly back in that like 2016-17 timeframe. I just remembered, my mind was blown
so fast.
And I think she's just one of those athletes that just has, she works extremely hard, but it just has such like raw speed too, and pretty like low heart rate raw speed too, which I think is a pretty brutal combination for ultras.
Yeah, like a mega efficient ultra gear.
Totally.
All right. Before we get into predictions, I've got three super quick questions that I want to run past both of you. Prediction on when the women's winner breaks away in the 100K. What time wins it roughly? And what time do you need to run to get on the podium? So starting with the breakaway point, how early, mid, or late into the race do you see the women's winner winning the Canyons 100K?
So I'm going to talk about something that's like slightly parallel to that, and then maybe I'll let Brett talk about when the women winner is going to break away. I think there's going to be a go out hot group, and I think that go out hot group will include Katie Scheid, MK Sullivan, Megan Roach, Mary Denholm, and Anna Cassius. So I think that would be our early lead pack, if I had to guess.
No Erin Clark in that lead pack?
I'd probably put her there too.
I guess we're assuming healthy. Yeah. Assuming healthy Erin.
Yeah, I'd probably put her in there too. She's a great racer and like likes to race people.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good aggressive front pack. I think the race gets broken up on the women's side on the climb up Devil's Thumb. I think KD just like decides to, I would like to run by myself now. I think Katie's kind of in a class of her own on something like this, especially with the running she's been putting in. Like, I think Katie's one of those, like, there's very few people in this field who could afford to like go all out up Devil's Thumb, actively recover, and then settle right back into like 100K pace and still finish. All right. I think Katie's probably got the strength to do that. And I could see that happening just for the sake of like limiting distractions for her for the rest of the race. It's just like trying to get it. Cause I'm sure Katie's goal for Western States this year is to win it in probably as fast as possible. If you're doing that, you're running a lot by yourself. Mm-hmm. So I could totally see a scenario where it's just like, get by yourself quick and then try and just hang on, because that's what you're going to be doing at States. So on the women's side, I think the race gets blown up super early.
What time wins it?
This is hard because
I struggled with this.
Yeah. So like historically, with this race, because there's been so many iterations for the men's side, it's anywhere from like 8 hours, 30 minutes to about 9 hours, 15 minutes. On the women's side, it's been, I mean, on some of those early editions, it was like 11 hours would win it. I would say in recent years, since like 2021, 2022 and onwards, it's been more like 9:45 to 10:15 wins it, with the podium kind of being under 10:30. I think this course will be like maybe 20 minutes slower than the net uphill version. So I think like, I think between 9:30, I think 9:30 will win it.
I wrote down 9:20 to 9:30.
Yes. And then how about to get onto the podium? How tight is that podium going to be, or how spread out?
So like last year, Ida ran like 9:51 and Priscilla was like just over 10 hours. I think the podium will be sub 10.
Okay.
Yeah. I was thinking right around that 10 hour mark for third.
Yeah. Same.
One last quick break to thank Rabbit, the official apparel partner of the Single Track Podcast. Rabbit has a few new arrivals on their website worth checking out, including new colorways for their High Country short sleeve t-shirt, their Shredder shorts, and one of my personal favorites, their Deflector sun shirts. Go check it all out at runinrabbit.com and feel free to use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout on their website for 20% off your next order. With that, let's get back to this preview episode with Brett and Leah. All right, let's get to picks. So I think we're going to go five deep. Obviously, we'll pick our golden ticket winners as well. But let's start with you, Brett. Who are your picks and why?
These picks are hard because kind of like, Leah, what you said, like categorizing all these runners. It's like, yeah, it's a mountainous course. You got to be good at downhill running. But like, it just never goes to plan like that. So it's like, who is going to be the one to shake that up and, you know, insert themselves into like the podium or the top five. So I feel like the three, four, five, honestly, I feel like the four, two, three, four, five could be like 12 or 13 different people. But these are the ones I chose. In fifth place, I've got Addie Bracey. You put her in the Long Mountain category.
I had her in the Long Mountain. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think she's had good, I don't know, good success out here before. Anna Cassius for fourth. You know, I think this will be a good redemption race from not getting to do Black Canyon, but kind of like you said, it's like, it's a lot of downhill. And I think she's getting there. Third, I have the wild card, Megan Roach, getting on the podium. And then second, I have Aaron Clark taking the golden ticket, of course. And then I have Katie Scheid winning the race.
I'll give you my rundown quick. Brett, we're very similar on the podium, but fifth, I have Megan Roche. Fourth, I have Addie Bracey. Third, I have Anna Cassius. Super impressed that she was able to back off Black Canyon when things didn't quite feel right from like a possible injury standpoint. Focused, put the chips on Canyons. I love that kind of mentality. Two, Aaron Clark. I think I'm just waiting for her to have a fully healthy season, but I think she's one of the very best in the sport, talent-wise. And then I've got Katie Scheid. I think, like we've said, she's in rare air. I think she's the clear favorite, even in a training context for her. Has become a generational talent. And in a training run for the bigger picture at Western States, she wins this race. I'm not going to say comfortably, but she wins it.
With a little room to recover.
With a little room to recover, yeah. Maybe a lot.
I will say we have a lot of past golden ticket winners in this field. So I think there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 7. Seven in Amanda.
Seven.
Yeah. Amanda Basham.
Oh, Amanda.
Addie Bracey, Riley Brady, Aaron Clark, Anna Mae Flynn, Katie Scheid, and Stephanie Austin. Stephanie Austin has gotten 2 golden tickets. Yeah. And one more thing. I did want to talk, like, because I feel like we've been pretty North America heavy so far. We do have a pretty solid international contingent in the women's race, especially with Stephanie Austin, who's Australian, and Anna McKenna. Stephanie has run Western States a time or two, I think just one time now, but has gotten golden tickets at Tarawera. And her training's pretty wild. She has been doing 110 plus mile weeks since January 1st in all but 1 week. But
oh, that's a lot of
it's
running.
Really flat. So she has no weeks above like 8,000 feet of climbing or so, which is pretty flat for 110 miles.
It's the Casey
training. But she's been somebody that's been definitely in the mix before. Anna McKenna, same deal. She has missed a golden ticket now by 2 spots. And then even ran Black Canyon this past spring, and I think was in the top 10 there as well. So always in that contention, but never quite nailing it. A couple other international names are Marta Wenta from Poland, living in Germany, does mostly Verdi races. So this one might be like kind of up her alley. Naomi Brand from South Africa, really known for great performances at Ultra Trail Cape Town, most recently with a second place finish in the 100 miler there. And then a Japanese runner who was 15th at UTMB this year, and then second to Lucy Bartholomew at Tarawera 100 miler last year, Kamino Miyazaki. So I do think definitely some people who could mix it up that we might not be as familiar with from a North American perspective. Anywho, my picks. I go and say that, and then I have all of North America. So
that was important. I think the international acknowledgement is important. Yeah.
So we got 5th place, Addie Bracey. Really excited for Addie. She's had like kind of ups and I mean, Addie's had such a long career when you think about what she did on the track for years competitively, came over to ultra running, took it by storm, and then has been at the top of our sport for quite some time. And I really respected her perspective after Chuckanut this past year. She just ran, I think got like 6th place or so, and said like she's happy for once that it was her fitness that was holding her back in a race, because she just felt like for the longest time it was her body. So she finally feels like her body's coming around, but her fitness just needs to catch up. And since Chuckanut, she's had just some great training. She's always just extremely solid and consistent, and she's had several weeks up around 100 miles with some good vert. So I think Addie, she was 5th place here last year as well. And I think we're going to see her in that top 5 again, just super consistent. And especially whenever it's a little bit of a cooler day, she seems to thrive the most. 4th place, Riley Brady, also had a top 10 performance at Black Canyon this past February, has 3rd place at Javelina in the fall, unfortunately just missing a golden ticket, but then did snag a golden ticket at the last iteration of Javelina before that. Riley, I think, has had a great chunk of training since Black Canyon, and I'm curious to see how they do on the hills and the vert. Had a probably not quite the Western States that they wanted in 2023, but I think might thrive this year in some cooler temps on this course as well. 3rd place, I've got Aaron Clark. Hasn't raced a ton recently, but when she races really aggressively and tough. And I just like her CCC 7th place finish is just like ingrained in my memory from 2022. And that's just the way I always see Erin now, is like, I would be terrified to have her chasing me down in the final mile. So yeah, I think she'll bring that energy to this race. 2nd place, Megan Roach. And then I got 1st, Katie Scheid as well. Kind of hard to bet against Katie these days.
And like we were saying earlier too, beyond the golden ticket factor, it is pretty cool that, and again, Brett, you mentioned earlier too, that there are ways likely for these athletes just based on performance history to get into these UTMB races if they want, but guaranteed 10 people after this race, if they want it, they got it at CCC. And that's pretty exciting too. That'll just make those fields even more fun to talk about later in the year. So Lee, are you taking Megan and Aaron as the two golden ticket recipients?
You know, yes. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those tickets rolls down though. Like I bet you somebody could probably say no. So okay.
Yeah. It's also like two people who like, there's more of a guarantee that someone like Katie Scheid comes out of this race healthy. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Megan, this is her first time racing 100K, first long ultra in a long time. Aaron seems to race so hard that she destroys herself and like not really like hasn't been great at the rounds of like run a race, then run a race. So it'll be interesting to see, but. Yeah, it'll be an exciting race. And I guess we never really officially mentioned there is a live stream this year, like at least allegedly. There's supposed to be a live stream.
There is supposed to be a live
stream. So there will be a race to
watch.
Not
sure how we will access that quite yet, and not sure if it'll be similar to last year's, which ended up being relatively inaccessible.
It was non-existent. I mean, it was like Free Trail like went and filmed bits and pieces of the race and then like clipped it together, and we had like live replays while the race was going.
And we'll make sure to link to everything that we have available to us in the show notes before this goes live. I'm sure there's going to be a couple day gap. So I'll make sure to reach out to the powers that be and we'll get links to that. And we'll make sure that the audience is in the know to the best of our ability. We got to get to this men's field though. And there's a lot to break down. I think the question that I want to entertain first revolves around Adam Peterman. The most frequent question that we got from the Instagram audience for the men's field was whether or not Adam Peterman is a Jim Walmsley killer. What does that even mean, Brett?
I mean, at least on a Western States type course, is Adam Peterman the one that can take down Jim Walmsley? Which I think he's one of the most realistic, you know, Jim Walmsley slayers, because again, Adam has still yet to lose an ultra. You know, I think his biggest scare was up against Devin Pancake, which is pretty impressive to say because he's a Western States champion. He perhaps won Western States easier than this Antelope 50K against Devin Pancake. But the point is, Adam still has yet to lose. And while he doesn't have the fastest time on the Western States course, his goal was to win. You know, he could have potentially run an hour faster. We don't know. I mean, he ran as hard as he needed to win. It was his debut 100. So I'm still going to say no. Given all that, a healthy Jim. And that's the thing. It's like the if then statement here is like, if Jim is healthy, then he will win Western States. That's my if then statement of the podcast.
Yeah. I want to see like one more year of really healthy training under Adam's belt for him to be a Walmsley killer. Like, I think where he's at right now is a really good spot, and I think he's very fit. And just the way Adam races is incredible to see. I bet you he probably feels like he's not at his peak fitness right now. So I feel like this wouldn't necessarily be the year. If Adam were to get a golden ticket at Canyons, I would still want to see at least another 6 to 12 months of really dedicated training from him to be right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Cause I was looking at some of his training and he said too, like he's purposely lowered his running volume, and added in some other things, but also just like not hammering the running quite as much. And the quality's been better. And I was curious just looking at everything. I was like, I just don't know if he's as fit as he was before. But then he went and raced that 50K and it's like, well, damn, he's pretty fit. Perhaps fit enough to race his way back into Western States. And I think it was you who said, like, Mike was out there on the course at Antelope Island and said, like, Adam, that's the hardest he ever saw Adam work, which that's encouraging to me because you know that there's proof that there's more in the tank for someone like Adam. So it's like, what if he works that hard on something like a Western States course? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And I think, yeah, it does mean going probably mile for mile with Jim for a very long time. But he has to get into the race first. And this is no cakewalk. There are some heavy hitters in this race, which is kind of how I have a couple categories, which was like, we've got some like certified heavy hitters. We have the Black Canyon Redemption Crew, yeah, which is like three quarters of this elite field.
It's crazy.
Don't call it a comeback.
Yeah. And then we've got, I mean, I feel like it's like disrespectful to say everyone else, but then it's just like the third chapter, yeah, of my people, which they've like, then they're like comprised of like, have had one or more really good results, mm-hmm, maybe also gotten a golden ticket or qualified for Worlds at some point. So like, but the heavy hitters have done it more than once.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I have them in there. So yeah, Adam Peterman, he was our certified heavy hitter, our like international. Well, we've got a couple international heavy hitters. Probably we'll get into that. Petter Engdahl. Petter has had some, you know, incredible results across, you know, the world's biggest stages. And he's one of those, trains in Norway with, you know, Killian and John Albon. And I feel like it's hard to not be a favorite of any race when like one of his last long runs a couple weeks ago, it was titled Long Run with Killian and John. It's like, if you're going on a long run with those guys and you title it so casually, like you're just your buddies.
W/Killian John.
Yeah. Like not even no last names. Like we just know like who they are, like LeBron. It's like Killian. Like, of course, like he doesn't even need a last name anymore. When you're running with people like that and you're just of that caliber, you can probably win, or at least be in contention to win almost any trail race.
It would have been cooler if he said long run with Jorne.
And one thing that he's definitely been on, like Petter, John Albon, Killian Jorne, they've been doing these interesting workouts over there in Norway where they will do like some number of flat threshold reps followed by like a VK and then like a long tempo, some combination of those things. And I feel like that style of workout is like the double threshold of the ultra world. Whereas like the marathoners and the track kids, they're like, oh, double threshold is so hot right now. Whereas like the ultra runners, it's like, I'm doing flat reps and then something stupid steep and then some more flat reps. And Petter's been doing some really steep things. So like, he's one of those people that I could see like making people very uncomfortable going up Devil's Thumb early on in the race. Cause like, I just have a feeling it's not going to feel that steep.
It's not. There's no way it's going to feel steep to him.
Yeah. Cause he's been doing some reps on gradients that's almost twice as steep.
Is there still time to brand those workouts or do they have a name?
Well, I when Adam was out here, he was saying, like, we were talking about his training, and he's like, yeah, I did a Killian workout the other day. So
that's what I've been calling them, too.
Okay. Killian workout.
That's awesome. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, he's been doing the Killian workouts. I don't think he's raced in the U.S. Since 2019, which was a 12th place at the Pikes Peak Marathon. So, it's been a while since he's come to the States, but. Yeah, he's just been super competitive across such a wide range of trail races. So that's why he's in my heavy hitter.
He's got the best shoes, too. He's got the best shoes by far.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Terex. He's got the Agravic Speed Ultra, like mechanical advantage.
Mechanical advantage.
And we all saw his ankle Terex just turn 90 degrees, and he just kept.
And if you can survive that. You could survive anything. They've since tweaked the shoe a little bit, probably because of that picture. They were like, oh yeah, we need to increase stability on the lateral ankle side. Maybe Finn will be able to find that picture and link it in the show notes because it's a good ankle roll. One of the best ankle rolls of all time. I have not forgotten Drew Holman. Drew is absolutely a certified heavy hitter. I mean, and he's proven in the last year and a half, 2 years, that he can be successful on more than just the Western States course. But this is mostly Western States course, and he's proven that he's very successful there. So I'm all for Drew having success here. He had a good like season opener at Big Alta, and sounds like, I mean, I listen to the Boulder Boys podcast, and you sometimes you kind of forget that Drew is also sitting there in the room, but then every once in a while he chimes in, and then they're like, oh yeah, you know, we don't run with Drew that often because he goes hard, he hammers.
The heaviness with which he hits.
The heaviness at which he hits, like he's like running, you know, like Magnolia Road, holding like four baseball bats. And you know what? Fifth at CCC, you know, he fifth at Worlds. That was like our big question mark for him last year. We were like, can Drew run like really steep things, like mountainous stuff? I think the answer is yes.
Guys, I just realized though, so, like Drew, after going to Cape Town this year, and like Drew can do it all. And I seeing like what Caleb did at Cape Town, Caleb's somebody I would expect to do well at Cape Town. And for whatever reason, I was like, oh, I don't know how Drew handles technical stuff. Like the fact that Drew threw down the time that he did at Ultra Trail Cape Town 100K back in 2022, like that has proven to me like Drew can do absolutely anything. And he needs to be like counted in the conversation for any style of race because, yeah, he's a crusher.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimate frisbee players are some of the most versatile athletes in the world. He's got that ultimate frisbee background, which don't overlook it.
That's his background. I just assumed it was baseball.
It's legit. No, I think he played ultimate frisbee in college and he was legit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we just projected baseball on him for so long. I just assumed he was actually a baseball player.
Just manifest it.
True home run.
Huh. The more you know. So, and then there was this other one that we were talking about. On the elite entrance list, it just says anonymous from China. And I did a little bit of digging, and I think it's Yu Pei Quan, because it says anonymous from China. You click their name, and it's a dead link to like a UTMB page. But the index number and the sponsor being Anta, all the numbers are the next closest person is Yu Pei Quan. And it would make sense to me because he had a second at the Hong Kong 100K and then a DNF at the Black Canyon 100K. So like I got to assume that the Black Canyon 100K, I mean, is either going for a golden ticket or really boosting that World Trail Major score. I had to think golden ticket. If it is golden ticket, then it makes sense to me that he'd be lining up for this golden ticket
and
race.
He was in the mix all day at Black Canyon. He ended up DNFing at the last aid station with like 4 miles to go with vision issues. So
that's what it was. Yeah. It was something.
It was weird. Yeah. So he was in the mix. I think he was in that like fourth place spot even whenever he kind of was falling back.
Yeah.
So I think, he's a solid one.
Yep. So I think that's definitely be someone to look out for and, you know, probably won't get much love on the previews because it just says anonymous.
So badass.
From China. I think there was, I mean, I'm sure there's going to like, I thought maybe like an incoming like cyber attack. It's like anonymous. Like, I don't know. Hopefully not. Another name that I've written down that I think we all definitely need to talk about, Matt Daniels. Mm. Like he's on like, this is the comeback year of Matt
Daniels.
He's
cooking.
But like, I think there's been a lot of talk about like, should Matt be moving? Like he wants to run Western States again, but it's like, dude, you are so fast. You are so good at the sub ultra stuff. I want to see him like selfishly.
Yeah.
I mean, selfishly, I want to see Matt do all of it, but it's been so fun to watch because we got to watch him on the live stream at Big Alta. Yeah, I guess we didn't get to see much at Chuck and I, but the race sounded awesome. And then he was absolutely flying at the Gorge 30K. Like, I want to see Matt run more fast races. And if he runs well here at the Canyons, then he's going to run Western States. And then he's just like an ultra runner again. And probably will have success at that. But man, I want to see Matt do like some of the shorter Euro, like, I want to see some Golden Trail. Yeah. I want to see Matt run Sierra Zanal. Like,
I know.
Is that too much to ask?
I agree. I love how good he is at the shorter stuff right now. And not that he's not equally good at the long stuff, but It's that idea of when somebody's so excellent and phenomenal at one thing, I just want to see them like dedicate their time and energy to that. Because I also think it's really easy to get stuck in this cycle of golden ticket races, trying to get to Western states. And not that it's boring, but there's just so much more out there and other things that matter too in the sport. And I think sometimes there's this idea that, like, you know, Western states is the end all be all for sponsorships, for notoriety and things like that. But yeah, just what Matt's been able to do early season so far, it makes me really eager and desperate for him to just do a little bit more of that.
I think if he can nail fueling for this race, I would have no problem putting him up there with Petter and Adam for a podium or even.
Yeah, that's my red flag that I have next to his name. Cause like both Big Alta and Chuck and I, he said in interviews that he was just like cramping up really bad at the end and was like, I should have eaten more, but then I didn't. I get so caught up in the racing that I only had like 10 ounces of water and a couple of goose. It's like 50K, you can for the most part fake it off of just like pure running baller talent alone. 100K, especially a net downhill one like canyons, it's way too long, it's way too far to be able to fake it. Like 100 kilometers will absolutely expose you in regards to fueling and nutrition. And that's just like his only, I feel like that's his only thing. It's like the one, like the fatal flaw Kryptonite, that if he can, if he can dial that in, he's very hard to beat.
Extremely. I agree.
And we should, like, Matt's run a fourth place at Western States before. So
15-19.
He's nailed it.
He's run very fast on all the things. Let's move into our Black Canyon redemption crew. So we've got 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th place from Black Canyon, all lining up in a big ass rematch at the Canyons. And that's in order of finish place. We got Craig Hunt, Stephen Kirsch, Trayson Knopp, Eric LaPuma. Of those four, who do you like the best on this course?
I just want to also comment, they were separated by 85 seconds at Black Canyon, those four, which is crazy.
Yeah, we were standing there 100 meters out. It was insane.
Oh, that's insane. Okay, so who do I like best from those four? As a person?
Yeah, you're right. That was a pretty open-ended question. Maybe from like a racing standpoint on the Black Canyon course.
Oh, in the Canyons course.
Canyons course,
so. Okay. I'm going to go with Stephen Kirsch for this one.
Yeah.
I've liked,
I agree.
I thought his Black Canyon, I mean, all of them ran phenomenally at Black Canyon. Craig Hunt actually finished the strongest and threw down in those last miles. I'll get to him in a second, but Stephen Kirsch surprised me there. And then since then, he's been putting in just a lot of good quality and good vert as well. And we've seen him be successful at races like CCC and things like that. Like I know Eric, for example, he's been exceptional at Worlds and like other races as well with multiple like top 10 finishes at two consecutive Worlds. I do wonder just with like a little bit specificity that's probably required for this, I kind of have Stephen Kirsch coming out slightly more on top of that group.
Yeah, I don't know if Eric has been able to run as much vert as he would like because of the Vermont winter. Although I did reach out to Eric LaPuma for a quote because I figured he would give one. And he said, quote, "I am going to make Adam Peterman cry," end quote. Because I asked him, I asked Eric, "Are you fit?" with just like the letter R and the letter U. And then I said, "Looking for a quote." And that's what he gave me. And then he also sent me a link to his like peak long run. He said, "Make sure Finn sees this." And it was 2.5 weeks ago, 50K long run with 4,400 feet of climbing, 6:48 pace with Ben True. Finn, he went on that run with Ben True.
That sounds hard.
But yeah, so that's a beefy run. I know it's just one run. One run does not define your whole training block, but like I've never done a run that impressive in my life.
Yeah, ever. I was talking to Mike today about Eric, and I was like, Eric's somebody I'm just always rooting for, and I want to do extremely well. And I was just chatting about his training compared to some of the other people. It looks like slightly less in some capacities. I think some of that's, you know, the vert that you can get in Vermont this time of year. But we got to talking about it, and we're like, that always works for Eric though. Like, he's never excessive in his training. He seems to know himself extremely well, and it's always worked regardless of what he's training for. He seems to know exactly that, like, the type of specificity that works for him and that he needs for a race. So I think it could come together nicely too.
Yeah. Yeah. Of those four, they've actually, like, Kirsch, Trayson, and Eric have all had, like, nice looking training blocks since Black Canyon. The only one that we were all a little confused about was Craig Hunt. But Leah, like you had said earlier, like, his training block looked a little strange before Black Canyon as well. So it's like, maybe that's just how he operates. Yeah. Or he's not putting all of his running on Strava. He did just run the Boston Marathon in 2:22. So the fast part of the training is there. Will he even run canyons? We don't know.
So with Eric, I want to, this is a total side note tangent, but I do want to take this opportunity to begin a public relations campaign to get Eric LaPuma to move to Salt Lake City and continue this trend of Salt Lake City becoming the mecca of American ultra trail running at the moment. I think he would love it here, and he would have no problem training specifically for all these races and getting over that golden ticket hump. We love you, Eric. We hope that you come to Salt Lake.
Eric has been talking about moving to Salt Lake for like 3 years now. Like, I feel like it's the modern family equivalent of like, oh, I got to fix that stair. Like, Eric's like, yeah, I'm going to move to Salt Lake. I'm going to get there. So,
but I would say, well, my person is Trayson Knopp. Yeah. I'm going Trayson Knopp in that group.
He's had some big vert weeks.
Big vert weeks. And I just love Nordic skiers, like, that make the transition to ultra trail running. Nordic skier at the U of Alaska. Partner is Claire Rhodes, who's also a great trail runner. And he had a great Black Canyon. So I don't know.
Yeah. He's in that young gun category as well, 25 years old, running 100Ks. So, also from the Black Canyon Redemption Circuit, we've got Rod Farvard, and he has lots of canyons experience. I mean, he got fourth in a golden ticket there in 2022, and then didn't have the greatest states, but then ran states again in 2023 and was the dreaded 11th. Then had a solid UTMB, like 11th at state, 17th at UTMB, like, not bad. Slightly off day at Black Canyon this year, getting 14th, but also that race was so deep, 14th is pretty solid. And he's been mixing in like pretty big volume of running and skiing, just with like some pretty monstrous vert, just like, you know, time on feet kind of week. So that could be there. We got the veteran Timo Tollefson.
Timo.
Can't hide from me, Timo. 11th at Black Canyon 100K, and also has put in like a very nice training.
This one looks good. I, like, in the last couple previews we've done when Tim's been on the start line, I've been like a little hesitant to have a ton of confidence in where he's at. He's had great training, and he seems quite confident in where he's at too. And I think that's a nice mix. And he knows these trails extremely well too. So, yeah, I'm excited for Tim.
Yep. Canyon's 50K champ way back in 2016, back when he was Tim Tollefson. Tim's been running like 100 miles a week most weeks, and then adding some biking as well. So we've been looking at like 130, 15 to 20 grand. And one of his most recent runs, his Strava title says, shaved and shreddy. So there's that.
Yeah, our friend of the podcast, Mike McMonagle, had a great question in the Discord. Who would you be the most afraid of at Western in both these fields if they got the golden tickets to get in? I think that's an excellent question, and I was reminded of that because I think that if Tim Tollefson can get in, I would be very afraid of Tim. I think that he would execute very well if he got another opportunity at Western States,
especially because, like, we know like how high his potential ceiling is. Like a lot of these other people were like, well, we've seen them race this good, but they could probably be this mm-hmm. good. Tim has been yeah. this good. So like all he has to do is get back to like where he's been, you know? And I mean, that's easier said than done, but it's at least it's not something he hasn't done before. So it's not, you know, nothing unrealistic there. The other name from the Black Canyon Redemption Tour is Matt Seidel, the newly minted banana costume marathon world record holder, 2:35 at a warm Boston marathon in a banana suit. I'm not even sure if winning canyons is going to be more impressive than that. Like he made some of the big news outlets because the sport of running is a joke apparently, but like that's what, you know, I don't even care. I'll take any publicity at all. But Matt's one of those people who we've talked about this before. Like he's really fit and I feel like his racing has not quite yet reflected it. He's had a lot of good races, but I think we all believe that he's capable of making that jump to like true elite tier racing without changing anything in his training. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Like I couldn't agree more. And I chatted with him a little bit before the Boston Marathon and he was just saying he's making distinct effort to not give all of himself to the banana world record and to make sure that he was respecting the fact that he had canyons in 2 weeks. And like Matt's somebody that if you follow him, like, you know, he balances a lot in his life from having fun to working a lot of hours at his job to doing great running to like being a social person. And I think that's really inspiring to see somebody balance a lot and then still give as much as they possibly can to running. I do want so much out of him. And I think he has one of those just like breakout performances. Like I think he's on the brink of it. It just needs to come together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe it'll be canyons.
Led the first 25
minutes. I don't
minutes
think that's going to happen.
Or 25 miles.
I know. It's not going to happen by leading early.
No.
Like, please just let other people do the work for the first, lead the second half.
Exactly.
And then it'll be great. A name that was supposed to run Black Canyon, but did not due to injury was Makai mm-hmm. Clemens. He's made a lot of our preview shows and the racing part hasn't quite clicked, but Leah, you and I both said the same thing. We're like, his training block looked really good for this one.
I was like, no, you took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, it's looked amazing. And like something to add, I read, I think on his Strava or Instagram or somewhere, he said this is his first time going into a taper, not feeling run down or broken. Maybe I finally learned something. So I think that's a great place to be because we've been talking about him in preview after preview saying like this is his race and it's either doesn't quite happen, but I think this one could be it.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I also learned just looking at his Strava, San Diego is a great place to train for the Canyons 100K because he is probably better heat adapted than anyone else. And he was able to get some monster vert runs.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Like he's been running in like 70s and sun and a little bit of humidity this whole time while still getting, you know, 100 plus miles a week with 15 to 20 grand of climbing.
That'd be perfect for the 60 degrees that they have on Canyons Day.
I know that's how that works. The one name that I got, thank you, David Roach, because I texted him and was like, I can't see anything other than the elite entrance list. Do you know anyone that's not on the elite entrance list that could be competitive? And he gave me a name and that name was Ryan Raff. So he is running this 100K and he won the Crown King Scramble in a course record, beating out David Roach and Makai Clemens, who got third. Very long hill climb. It's a 50K with like 6,000 feet of climbing and point to point or something. And if you look at the top 10 on Ultra Senf, it's like so many legends have run that race and he just set the course record there. I feel like he hasn't quite figured out the long ultras yet. He's also in the young gun category. He's 24 years old. definitely still figuring it out, but training blocks looked really good too. Like 90 to 100 miles a week off of 6 days a week. Out of Flagstaff, just did a big run over in the Grand Canyon and has gotten to like train on all the classic Flagstaff spots. So like, I don't know, the good juju's probably there because it seems like if you train in Flagstaff, you run in Auburn really well. So I'm excited to see what he does.
Possible if-then statement right there.
Maybe someday. Oh, it's just like, if you train in Flagstaff, then you will have a good race in Auburn. Who else? There's a lot of names. Moises Jimenez, the other Moy, the Boulder boy. He's had some good big mountain results. I'm curious if this Canyon's 100K will be not mountainous enough for him. But, you know, he's training with Matt and Drew, who are both racing. They both say Moy is a very, very good climber, which there's not no climbing in this race, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see how he does. Didn't have the greatest day at Big Alta, so that doesn't have me feeling too confident. I've gotten to see Drew and Matt race way more. We were my last two. JP Giblin, another golden ticket, you know, winner. He DNF'd Black Canyon. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. So I guess I should have put him in the Black Canyon Redemption Tour category along with pretty much everyone else. And then the other name is Cody Lind. You know, I'm curious. Cody ran was it the Chianti by UTMB mm-hmm. race, and you got seventh. Like, I don't know, that result seems pretty mid, but you know, who knows if he was like training through it or not, but no stranger to Western States. I mean, placed as high as fourth in 2021. So, you know, very experienced on this course, knows the kind of training that it takes to have success there. That was a lot of rambling by me. You guys.
No, those were all good things. Rambles.
Did I miss anyone?
My only one that I would add, because I'm just like the biggest Brian Curl fan alive, is Brian Curl. I think he's had a couple hiccups getting to start lines in recent years at Golden Ticket races.
Yeah.
And I think last year Canyons had a unfortunate reroute and flags were just not good. So excited to see him give Canyons another go because he had a great performance here back in 2021 or 2022. And his training's been great. He's another person that I look at, like similar to Makai Clemens, where when I looked at their training, I'm like, it's been just consistently really good all winter. He's training out of Crested Butte. So he's got that high altitude impact and I think is in a really good place. So I think when Brian has a great race, it's very, very good. So I'm hoping this is one of those because I think there's a lot that the world hasn't seen from Brian so far.
I like that. That's a good one. Finn, what do you think?
Well, I got to ask three questions before I make my picks. Same thing as the women's field: breakaway point, time to win, time to podium. What do you think, Brett?
I think with just how there's like, there's no Katie Scheid on this men's field. I mean, like, I know we've got like, or maybe we have two Katie Scheids. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I think it's going to take a little bit longer for the eventual winner of this race to emerge. Kind of when Leah broke down the course, I think it could happen around that, the climb up out of Driver's Flat. So it wouldn't surprise me if there was still a decent sized group within, you know, 5 minutes of each other at Forest Hill. I don't know how much those gaps will grow between Forest Hill and Driver's Flat, but I think that section is long enough and kind of mellow enough where you could then realize like, oh crap, my legs have no more gas. And the last 10 miles I was actually faking it. And then explosion on Driver's Flat. What was your next question?
Time to win and time to podium.
I'm curious about the total time, because it could swing a lot just by like, are we going to have that one person who just like sets a blistering pace, like I think KD will do on the women's side. Like that's not really Adam's thing. Would Petter do that either?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know if he's been like, he's good at winning races, but I don't know if it's just like from the front. And then like Drew doesn't do that either. So then like the only person, like, I don't know if I would see Matt Daniels doing that either, because it's like, it's a long race. He's speedy enough for it, but then it's like, well, I got to hold back because I don't want to start cramping. So then do we get this scenario of like a pretty chill first 50K actually, because no one wants to be the person that challenges Drew, Petter, Adam. And then we just start ripping in the second half. If that ends up being the case, I think like, I don't know, like 8:15-ish, 8:20.
Yeah.
Could someone run 8 hours on this course? I think maybe. Yeah. But like, it would take, like to time trial 8 hours on this course might take a sacrifice of Western States to do it. I don't know if it's worth it. What do you think?
What did I have? I think I said, yeah, historically it's been 8.5 to 9 hours for men. I'd say, yeah, 8 hours.
That's so fast.
Especially when you put, I think Adam put this into perspective for us when we were out here chatting with him. We asked him like what time he thinks it'll take to win it. And I think he said somewhere in like the 7:30 to 8 hour range. And the way he was thinking about it is minutes per mile. So like if you're running 8 minutes per mile for 100K, it's roughly 8 hours. And then I was like, oh, that sounds fast for this course.
Yeah. Especially like there's going to be some 15 minute miles in there. You know, like we've been talking about Devil's Thumb, but the first canyon that you drop through, the one that had that heinous bridge that apparently they've rebuilt, the bottom, I don't know, half mile on either side of that canyon is very steep too. So like that's the first one. Then you go do Devil's Thumb and then you go do El Dorado. Like there's a lot of slow miles there. And then to still average 8 minute pace means you're like have a ton of miles that are under seven.
Yeah, that's fast.
All right, I'm going to give you my picks.
Let's hear them.
And I'm going to preface it by saying a question / comment of how much less impressive is getting fifth at Canyons versus fifth at Western or an equivalent race. I don't think it's that much less. So I wanted to kind of give credit to who I got fifth here with that kind of context. Trayson Knoppen fifth.
Strong disagree.
Really?
Continue. Yeah. Fifth at States is worth so much more.
So much
fifth at States is worth like winning or second
Black Canyon
at Canyons.
And Canyons. I don't know if it's so much more anymore. I agree that it's more. I don't know if it's so much more.
Like hindsight's 20/20 because we get to see the results of Black Canyon. If we're talking the preview episode before Black Canyon, like fifth at Black Canyon, fifth at States, I'm like, oh, fifth at States. Now that Black Canyon happened, I'm like, okay, fifth at Black Canyon is pretty good. Yeah. I'm just not convinced we're going to see that sort of finishing spread at this race.
I think we will.
So
I think we will. I hope.
Blow ups.
I hope I'm wrong, but I think we will. Trayson Knoppen fifth, Eric LaPuma in fourth. Shout out Eric, come to Salt Lake. Third, Drew Homerun. Second, Adam Peterman. First, Petter Engdahl. And I've got a slight edge on Petter over Adam because I agree, Leah, with what you said earlier that, you know, Adam is coming back from injury. Once he's back, if we give him like another year of solid training, I think he's a world beater. But I got to give the edge to Petter right now. And I think the thing that clinched it for me is just he's got the training group advantage. Adam's got amazing people to work with in Missoula. But like when you get to run kind of at will with people like John Albin and Killian on a regular basis, that's just amazing. And I think it rises you. So, that was for me the differentiator.
That's some like best reasoning you've ever had behind your picks in the history of preview shows.
I know, because normally he just listens to ours and he's like, which of those do I like the best?
No, that was like a very well thought out top five, and it's like surprising and perhaps different, but like good, like that's a pretty bulletproof argument. You're right. Like Petter has one of the best training groups in the world. And like sure, Adam hasn't lost a race, but that doesn't mean he won't ever lose a yeah. race. And apparently this is the one. Good work, Finn.
I did just say I was running with Caleb earlier and I was like, yeah, sometimes I wonder if Finn just has me and Brett do all the research and just sits back and like just moderates. And I was like, he actually sits there and does none of his own research. So that, yeah, you did some. Good job, Finn.
What do you got, Leah?
I've got fifth, Rod Farvard. Guys, his Lake Sonoma marathon this past weekend,
it was good.
Awesome. He beat like Patty O'Leary. He beat Gus Gibbs. There's one more guy in there, blanking. He had a great day and it was so sloppy. I think he ran like 7:30 pace over those trails and it was pretty sloppy conditions. So part of me feels similarly about Rod as I do Matt Daniels. I actually think like where the magic's at for Rod is in like the trail marathon to 50K distance. And he just hasn't spent enough time there because like last year he ripped Canyon's 50K until he got lost. And I think bumped back a few spots, but I would love to see him spend more time at that distance, to be honest. But I think Rod, I always love Rod's training. I think he is really dedicated and puts a lot of time and energy in. And I think he knows this area and course pretty well. So it'll come through here with a fifth place finish. And unfortunately, missing out on a golden ticket by a few spots. Fourth, Stephen Kirsch, for all the reasons I listed earlier. Third, Drew. Can never count against Drew. He's the best. And I think he will do exactly what he needs to do here for third place. Second, Petter. And I've got Adam winning it.
Sweet.
Adam stays undefeated.
Yeah, I think he does. I think when he's gonna pull it out.
Yeah. All right. In fifth place, I've got Mekhi Clemens. I feel like this is gonna be the race that reflects, you know, his last few great training blocks. And I think, you know, the having not started Black Canyon is going to end up being like a blessing in disguise because he got to put together like two great blocks without actually trashing yourself from the race. And I know we said between the four, like Stephen Kirsch's looks best. I put Eric LaPuma in fourth because prior to me asking that question, which was like totally off the cuff and then agreeing with you, there's Stephen Kirsch. I had already written Eric LaPuma down in fourth. He said he was going to make Adam Peterman cry. Like that kind of swagger going into the race. So I had him written fourth and I'm not changing that because that's cheating. Not allowed to. Picks are locked in. Third place, I have Petter Engdahl for reasons. The reasons are Drew Holman getting second. I feel like the deep burning desire to get a golden ticket is going to be burning hotter in Drew than Petter. Mm. I think Petter's absolutely fit enough world-class athlete to get the golden ticket, but there is something about that like deep, deep motivation to like want the golden ticket. Cause it's like Western States. Like does Petter think about Western States the same way Drew does? Mm. And I think maybe this race will like ignite that fire, but it's not this race that he gets the golden ticket at. And then I have Adam Peterman winning the race because I believe he is fit after avoiding the pancake. And then we get to see, and also the storyline is just so much better if Adam gets to go into Western States undefeated than if he gets in with like a second place golden ticket. So like, that's why he's got to win this race. That's my top five.
Those are good ones.
There you have it. Go forth with some excellent fantasy free trail knowledge. And that was it. That was our Canyon's 100K preview. I should say before we go, any final thoughts, Brett, any final thoughts, Leah, about this race or anything else in the ultra running space?
I mean, I think the only thing that I've got that I've said before is like, if there's anything that we missed or like anything, you're out on your run, you're listening to this and you're screaming out into the forest because we said something stupid, DM single track on Instagram. Just send it to Finn. he'll send it to us. Maybe he won't, but he usually does. If we get some good things, he sends it our way. But yeah, don't hold back. Finn loves fan mail, fan hate mail, whatever it is. Carrier pigeon, owl, send it to Finn.
Yeah. Do us one favor on social. After listening to this episode, please, if you're still with us right now, give us a shout out on social and let us know your favorite moment in this episode. Leah, what's your final thought?
I was just going to say, we forgot to talk about Preston Cates. Preston Cates, big fan over here. I think he'll also have a great race. He's the last one on my list that we didn't get to talk about. So go, Preston.
Preston's a wild card. Wild card for sure. Sixth at Canyons in 2021. Yeah.